Profesores plantearon. Por lo tanto, la verdad es que nos sorprende esta crítica desalmada que no tiene ningún sentido.
Los profesores anunciaron nuevas acciones para sumar apoyo a su demanda de una carrera profesional que ayude a mejorar la calidad de la enseñanza. Beatriz Mitchell, Telesur, Valparaíso, Chile.
En México crece el rechazo a la presencia de la multinacional Monsanto y sus plantas y semillas genéticamente modificadas. Reina Melchor reporta.
Para el investigador Abelardo Ávila del Instituto Nacional de Nutrición Salvador Subirán, durante este año al menos 10.000 niños mexicanos morirán a causa de enfermedades asociadas con la desnutrición. Considerado también que durante este sexenio de Felipe Calderón, pues estima que estos 100.000 niños fallezcan a consecuencia de diarreas o enfermedades respiratorias. Se estima que este problema afecta a 1 millón de menores de 5 años. Durante el Día Mundial de la Alimentación y frente al edificio que alberga las oficinas de Monsanto en México, activistas de Greenpeace desplegaron una manta gigante con la leyenda por un maíz libre de transgénicos, mientras activistas denunciaron el interés de esta empresa que busca obtener permiso para sembrar en nuestro territorio maíz genéticamente modificado, ya con fines comerciales, lo que significaría acabar con el maíz mexicano. Escuchamos parte del mensaje que dio Aleira Lara, coordinadora de la campaña de Agricultura Sustentable y Transgénicos de Greenpeace México.
Nos encontramos frente al edificio que alberga las oficinas de la empresa transnacional Monsanto para exigirle que retire las manos de nuestro maíz mexicano. Esta empresa ha solicitado la siembra de 700.000 hectáreas de maíz transgénico en el estado de Sinaloa, principal productor de maíz blanco, base de nuestra alimentación. Esto representa un grave riesgo para nuestra soberanía alimentaria. Y este importante día para la alimentación de los mexicanos, le venimos a exigir a Monsanto que salga del territorio mexicano. Por un maíz libre de transgénicos, estamos en alerta máxima.
Reportó desde Radio Teocelo, Veracruz, México, Reina Melchor.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the Thursday edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
I'm marching to the border. I don't give a damn about your new world order. I ain't gonna fight your dirty little war no more. When I was younger, so much dumber, I bid farewell to my hometown, my mother and my father, and marched off to fight your dirty little war over there. We killed their fathers, we killed their brothers, we made whores of their widows, sisters and daughters. My soul was breached by your dirty little war over there. That's why I'm marching to the border. I don't give a damn about your new world order. I ain't gonna fight your dirty little war no more. Far away from my son. dirty little war over there. That's why I'm marching to the border. I don't give a damn about your new world order. I ain't gonna fight your dirty little war no more.
Jim Hendy, I guess it's called Kill Me Down the Road. March Into the Border from his album Shout Down the Wind. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, and the stream is happening too. If you want to get it, you go to the Huff website. That's one place to go anyway, huffsantacruz.org, and click on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you'll get the website. Can't do it directly because of commercial problems, but we're here in case you want us. Again, huffsantacruz.org, and click on FRSC, the name of the show, which is called Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, which is a sort of a long tongue twister for me. Bathrobes, Pierres is a sort of a comic name, a whimsical name, actually, which links up bathrobe, which is something I sometimes wear at demonstrations and in court when I'm expressing solidarity or bitter satire at the reality of homeless people who have essentially to sleep in public illegally and face criminalization as well as hardship for it. And that's hence the name Bathrobespierre. Robespierre is sort of a caustic joke from earlier days, which I will explain later if you happen to be around. This show goes for 2 hours. I do a lot of talking about local politics, local bad ordinances, local experiences of people who have been suffering under those bad ordinances. And you can call in with your own stories, your own thoughts, your own criticism, your own suggestions at 427-3772, 427-3772, area code 831, for those of you who aren't in the area, 831-427-3772. You can also reach me off air if you want to be on the show as a guest. You have some suggestions or some criticisms or some additions or corrections, whatever, at the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Which is also the line for the organization that I work with, and we do sort of we maintain a website called, which I mentioned before, huffsantacruz.org. We plot and plan and scheme and debate as to what to do as the scene grows darker around homeless folks getting ticketed and driven out of town and out of sight, and we engage in public protests and make statements and go to city council meetings and work in cooperation with other organizations to support the rights of poor people or to try to establish some of those rights or try to these bring back to mind and memory some of those rites. Huff meets us once a week at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 7:03 Pacific at 10 in the morning. Come on down. I'm sometimes a bit late, so don't give up. There is coffee to be had. It's free for participants, and participation doesn't involve doing much. Sit around nodding your head or shaking your head or whatever you'd like to do. That's Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, Sub Rosa Cafe, 7:03 Pacific. There's also homeless activity and demonstrations happening at the Occupy Santa Cruz meetings, which meet every Sunday at 2 at the main post office, and every Sunday, I should say every Wednesday, at 6. Sometimes the meetings are sparse. That's been the case recently. In fact, they seem to be getting pretty sparse, but there are some old-timers and some newcomers who stick with it and who continue to work on issues. Like, for example, tonight there is an issue. Some of the committees that Occupy Santa Cruz formed are still active. One of them is the Foreclosure Committee, and they have, I don't know if they've booked or they've just informed us of an event that's happening up in Felton tonight at the foreclosure town hall at the Satellite Teleworks Center, 6265 Highway 9 in Felton, next to Don Quixote's restaurant. It's C.J. Holmes, founder of the nonprofit Homeowners for Justice. He's going to host a free foreclosure town hall starting at 7 o'clock in about an hour. That's today, Thursday, October 18th. In Felton, to discuss the ongoing foreclosure crisis and possible new solutions. I'm reading from the Santa Cruz Indy Media announcement. Holmes will provide overviews of the new California law called the Homeowner's Bill of Rights, or is it the Homeowner's Last Rights? Sorry, my aside. The implications of the upcoming expiration of the IRS's mortgage debt forgiveness law on December 31st, 2012, and help folks consider various new options related to foreclosure. The presentation will be followed by a question and answer period. We've invited several radio stations, community TV, and CNN to this event, as well as local newspapers. And, of course, if I weren't here in the studio, I might be up there in Felton covering the foreclosure meeting. In fact, if anybody is going to that foreclosure meeting and wants to report on it while it's happening by cell phone, please give a call, let us know what's cooking, even let us hear some of the discussion. That would be great, because I will be continuing on this show from 7 to 8 tonight, and that's apparently the first hour of this Felton event with C.J. Holmes, Homeowners for Justice. And the Homeowners for Justice website, let's see if I can give you a little bit more information about that for those of you who are thinking of either abandoning this show or maybe keeping it on as long as you can as you head up the hill, is, let's see what we got here. As I go to the website, or attempt to do so, having a little bit of a trouble here with a fumbly type computer. I'll get back to you on that, but that is something you might want to consider doing because it's one of the key issues, particularly if you are interested in stopping foreclosures or publicizing the abusiveness of foreclosures. Well, there's information there to be had, and also, there's information for our listeners here if you decide you want to share it with us. So, again, 7 o'clock, right next to Don Quixote's restaurant, a free discussion with Homeowners for Justice on sort of the upcoming, all the new dope on the foreclosure situation, which, of course, may be a little out of the league of people listening to this program, since I doubt many homeless or poor people actually own property, but you probably have friends who do, friends who are in that situation, and you might want to know about that, and also just to educate yourselves. If you go to the Homeowners for Justice website, you can find actually a foreclosure town hall video, a one-minute video, and public service announcements, press releases, rags to riches press release, a petition for foreclosure moratorium, and the causes and effects of the foreclosure crisis. Warnings and information that owners may find helpful in trying to keep their homes, and the extensiveness of bank fraud that has caused this foreclosure crisis, which isn't being talked about by the candidates who are doing all that blathering to the national media and excluding the third and fourth and fifth party candidates. There's also a filing complaints page on Homeowners for Justice if you want to hear what or read what others experienced. They invite you to participate. They present what they call the most effective and inexpensive ways for owners to stave off foreclosures, encourage the bank to modify their loan, or provide the least stressful transition to another home. And some of the key things are you require written proof. Loan modification can be proven. A foreclosure cancellation can be proven. If anyone says they are licensed, check them out. Anyway, there's a lot of specifics here. I'm not going to go into it in detail because, frankly, I don't own any property. I don't own my home. I don't have a home in that regard. I rent a room. And I'm probably talking to a lot of people who aren't doing that either. But one of the things that gave bulk and force and power to the Occupy movement was this incredible reality of the huge amounts of profits being made and the huge bailouts being given to large banks from both the Republicans and the Democrats, and there's been no real change in that that I can see. And this is a good way of educating yourself. One of the problems that I have had, or that the Santa Cruz 11 have had, those of us who are accused of conspiracy to occupy a bank, because we simply went in the bank that was occupied by others for a while, back in December of last year, the Wells Fargo leased vacant Coast Commercial Bank. We're facing 7 years in prison for that. One of the problems is to really get out to the community what is happening in terms of the corrupt and cruel record of Wells Fargo Bank and how it treats and has been treating and continues to treat members of the community. You would think that that's something that we would be front and center on, but unfortunately, we aren't, not as much as we could be, but some groups are definitely investigating the issue and pursuing it locally, finding out that the large banks like Wells Fargo have indeed a routine corrupt record of this joint foreclosure loan modification tracks where they keep confusing people, seemingly with the aim of foreclosing on their property and getting more num-nums, more profits. That's what banks and capitalism are all about. So, anyway, that's not the usual subject of my show, and perhaps it should be in more detail, and perhaps in the future it will be, if either I acquire the discipline or interest or can get some guests on here who want to talk about that. And who knows, maybe we can talk to some folks in future shows who are at these foreclosure fraud meetings with Homeowners for Justice. Somebody went to the meeting tonight. That's 7 o'clock again tonight up in Felton. However, what I usually have done in the past a lot of and will now again continue to do is talk about and play from the streets the latest accounts of people who had their backpacks foreclosed on, their liberty seized and destroyed or dismissed and denied, who had their campsites raided and trashed by the police or by the rangers, or often or even by other homeless people, but mostly the complaints are of the authorities doing this kind of thing. And there is a full-scale, high-profile, unapologetic campaign to crack down on people who have no legal place to go, no options, many of whom are disabled, all of whom are poor, who are and have certainly for many of them for long periods of time lived in Santa Cruz, many of whom are from Santa Cruz but do not have the money for lodging anymore, who are outside, all with the meanwhile the sanctimonious claim that the true homeless are being served by the Homeless Lack of Services Center and allied agencies, simply not true. There is some service that is provided by the group I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center. They call themselves the Homeless Services Center. And namely, they provide laundry facilities. They provide 2 meals a day for weekdays, and I think some meals on the weekends. They provide sometimes phone access and mail access for a small price. But in terms of shelter, the most basic need, because you have to have shelter, or in this city and county, you are criminalized as an individual, as a human being. That is not provided. And more important, perhaps, even the fact that it's not provided, is the fact that if you try to provide it yourself, you face a criminal label. You face the camping ban ordinance, or worse, the lodging ordinance, which one of our activists, Linda LeMaster, faces trial for, which two of our activists, Ed Fry and Gary Johnson, are in jail or under house arrest for, and which has been used also against those protesters who simply want to raise issues at night at public buildings by holding up signs and demanding that public officials stop pretending there is no problem and address the problem and start going down the road we need to go to reestablish basic rights for all of us. So, a lot of folks talk about these issues, and one place that happens a lot at is the Red Church, the Calvary Episcopal Church, who every Monday night Father Joel Miller and other compatriots there give away a tasty meal, actually. It's not bad. Happens every Monday. Every Monday between 5 and 7. Usually there is a religious shtick you have to... You don't have to listen to it, but it is... many people do apparently enjoy listening to it. I don't spend much time listening to it. I'm not of that persuasion myself. But you can then go in and you can get coffee and then you can get food. And it's also a place where there's some announcements made about upcoming events. And right next door there's what's called the Penny University, which is an organization run by Paul Lee and Bruce Bratton, which brings in speakers mostly on subjects that don't involve poor people, but that are sort of conventional lefty-type topics or community topics. And anyone is invited to come in and listen to that, though the day you can get these old duffsters to do shit about any of these issues around poverty, well, I'll take off my hat to you. I'll go get a hat, and I'll take it off to you. So, but they're sometimes it's interesting stuff. People are gathered. And indeed, Joel Miller's Red Church group did throw a candidate for him about a week ago. A week and a day ago, and they had five of the city council candidates talking about what they would and wouldn't do around homeless, how homeless people are treated, what services they do and don't receive, and so forth. And I was generally depressed and discombobulated and very cranky as I heard this. Well, probably shouldn't have been surprised, and I don't think I was. A politician's rap going on and on about Don Lane, the mayor, who's running for city council and re-election. We don't have the money. Other people, oh, we must take public safety first, but we certainly, you know, we're very concerned with public safety, but we also want to help those homeless. And no apparent understanding except for one or two people like Steve Plaich, who hasn't brought up the issue independently, but who, once it was mentioned, did strongly state that here are these sweeps that are happening that are destroying people's homes, destroying people's property, destroying people's, taking people's medicine and keepsakes, and for what? So that this can provide a nice background for the election of even more right-wing candidates or maybe pseudo-liberal candidates who want to prove they're tough on law and order, sort of like Obama bombing Afghanistan to show he's such a he's better and more militarily minded than his Republican loony opponents. Anyway, there I go on Mondays, every Monday, for interviews frequently, and here's a couple of the interviews I got. And if you have any thoughts on what you're hearing or you have some stuff to add, please do call in, 427-3772. Here at the Red Church, it's October 15th, 2012, and we're talking, oh gosh, around 5 o'clock on the lawn outside, rather warm day. People are taking their ease, and I'm talking with the infamous Lawrence. Hey, Lawrence.
How you doing, sir?
You're checking out your court date, and what's the story? What does the court want you for this time?
Trespassing and obstruction, the session charges.
Trespassing on 11-8-12. That must mean...
Assisting arrest.
Is this a couple days ago or is this a couple months ago?
A couple months ago.
September 27th, you were violating...
Mayors.
And what exactly did they say you were doing?
Sleeping in a bush, having a meth pipe in my hand, resisting arrest. But they never put me in jail.
And in what way did they claim you resisted arrest?
I fought back.
They claim you fought back?
Yeah.
And who were the officers involved?
I don't know them.
And were you alone?
Yes, I was.
Now, I remember when we spoke some months ago, you said that the officers have been giving you a wide berth because of your medical condition. You still have a medical condition?
Yes, I do.
Now, don't exaggerate. Tell me the exact details.
I do have cancer.
And what kind of cancer do you have?
Stomach cancer and lung cancer.
And what kind of treatment have you been getting from the police in the last few months?
Tickets.
So this is one you mentioned. This is going to court when?
Next month on the 8th at 8:30 in the morning.
And you're facing, it looks like, a couple of penal code sections. And they claim that you were fighting with them?
Fighting them, resisting arrest, threatening to bite them, and I never bit them.
Okay. Well, you might have been hungry at the time.
No, I was asleep in the bush.
So about what time did these officers come and give you your wake-up call?
About 10:40 in the morning.
And what were they going to... They were charging... Where was this?
On the levee.
So you were in a no-trespassing zone?
Yep, no trespassing, no sleeping, no nothing zone.
And what possessed you to go into such a forbidden area? Are you just a known... sort of plowing new trails through unknown territory?
What's no, it was just on the levee. In the bush in the levee. Before they all cut it all down.
And were other people doing the same kind of thing?
Yeah, but not in the same spot.
And was this part of an organized effort? Did they say they'd been complained about you, or did they just happen to be wandering around in that area?
They were just taking everyone out of the bushes. I was one of them.
You know that anybody else got a ticket that day or not?
I don't know.
And since then, have you gotten any citations?
No, I slept on the beach.
And isn't that illegal to sleep on the beach?
Yeah, but I don't give a shit.
What, do you think your own right to sleep is more important than our sacred laws?
Laws is only to be broken.
I see. Well, we can see why the police are trying to nail you down and rein you in.
They won't let me.
Yes. So, how many tickets have you gotten in the last month or so?
Two.
And one of them was this trespassing, or that was the one last month?
This is 3 months ago.
And so what have you gotten in the last month?
A camping ticket.
And have you signed up for the Homeless Lack of Services Center waiting list?
Yes, and it's going to be a very long waiting list.
Well, they're supposed to eliminate your ticket if they do, if it's a camping ticket. I don't know if they do or not, mind you, but that's what they say they do.
I guess, but they haven't helped me on any of them.
So have you gotten any camping ticket failure to pay notices or anything of that sort?
Yeah, that's what I'm going for right now.
And that, well, this one is an appearance for the penal code violations of trespassing.
Sleeping.
I didn't see the 6.36 there, but maybe I missed it.
Camping.
Camping with intent to sleep? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what they were trying to say.
Yeah, you got to watch it. This is the kind of criminal conspiracies that are formed here. Sleeping conspiracies. It makes me feel very tired even to think about it.
Yeah, me too.
We've been talking with...
Lawrence.
And, of course, we had that man about the Internet.
You know what makes me tired?
And before we go into loitering Lee's thoughts, and he's quite an articulate fellow with his own website, Anti-Imperials blog, in case you want to check him out. Just some comments on Lawrence's stuff. You know, there's mention of a meth pipe, which many people will say, oh, no, a meth pipe. Well, again, I guess it depends how you feel about using the criminal law to go after medical problems around the drug war. Anybody who believes that possession of anything for personal use of that kind should be the basis for criminal charges, particularly poor and homeless people, particularly people with conditions like cancer, if Lawrence is accurate, are, I think, sadly misguided and somehow trapped in some kind of right-wing mindset, some law and order mindset that had best been discarded two centuries ago. But again, it seems to be all the rage these days. Those who are listening to the show know my usual response to this. If there's no legal place to go, then everyone is illegal. And this is particularly cruel and harsh on people who are disabled or ill. And it also promotes disrespect for law generally, which may be a good thing, since law generally these days may in fact be simply, in fact many claim is, simply an expansion of privilege and power for the benefit of the few at the expense of, rather than for the benefit of the many. But an argument used against the absurd applications of these sleeping bans and sitting bans and spirit changing bans and laws that criminalize the poor just for being is that they make poor people into criminals who then, you know, become convinced that other kinds of behavior which are called criminal are equally acceptable because look at how ridiculous these laws are. I mean, that's the argument about when you create ridiculous laws, you make law itself ridiculous, which, again, for those who are anarchistically inclined and believe that laws generally are made for the privilege of the rich, I mean, it may not be a bad idea that people regard laws generally as ridiculous. Let's hear some more. Again, this was last Monday. Today's the 18th, so it would have been the, the 15th, 17th, 16th. Yeah, it would have been October 15th. And here we go.
Was just listening, even though it's like watching grass go. I was listening to the Giants game, and Phil Lesh and Bob Weir sang the national anthem. What's become of your culture, people?
Now, any other more specific bibbidi-hibbas around Santa Cruz that you have, Lee?
No, all's quiet on my front. I think I scare most of the authority types that try to deal with me, and they just leave me alone after that, which is just as well. Really, they've got much more important things to do with their
time.
You
are an articulate voice of the far left on the homeless front. On the other hand, when you went to shitty council the other day, I was replaying one of your earlier appearances when you pointed out your encounter with a security guard, and then you came back and said, "What have you done?" and received no reply from Uncle Don Lane.
I didn't expect a reply any more than I think Lee Myers expected a reply from the ACLU in regard to his...
But wait, Steve Plaich is on the board of directors. How could you not expect a meaningful response?
Okay. What's happened?
And for those who don't know, Steve Plaich is a city council candidate, a frequent speaker on Free Radio Santa Cruz, an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz, and someone who has set up his own homelessness legal assistance project, where he does, in fact, try to help people who get citations in court. He hasn't had an extensive legal background, or so he claims, and that seems to be true. And people, he shows up every Monday at the Red Church for those who want to check out his advice. He also is reachable by phone at 466-6078, 466-6078. And his advice sometimes is quite effective. One homeless, woman who went to court, he was telling me recently, even though the police officer did show up, and half the time cops do not show up for these citations, or that used to be the average in the number of times cops didn't show. If a police officer doesn't show, then the charges are dismissed, since the police officer in these minor infractions are minor to, you know, the courts, major to people who have to face a several hundred dollar fine. That's the only evidence they have against you, is the witness of the police officer. The testimony of the police officer is the only witness. So, usually. And there's no city attorney prosecuting, usually, unless you're an activist and they decide they want to throw the book at you, as seems to have been the case with some of us recently. But in any case, this individual won her case. by getting the officer to admit he had reasonable doubt. And that is the key to winning trials, either before a jury or a judge. As most people know from watching television, the prosecution has to prove, the evidence has to show beyond a reasonable doubt that you are guilty. So that means it's not a majority of the evidence, not 75% of the evidence. It's not preponderance of the evidence. It is beyond a reasonable doubt, which seems to be a pretty high standard. The problem is, of course, that courts and judges tend to believe cops far more frequently than they believe ordinary people, particularly Commissioner Kim Basket case, as I somewhat sarcastically call the commissioner who handles most of these cases, unless you disqualify her and send the cases into Department 1 or 2, which is where you get an ordinary, regular judge, not just a commissioner, Judge Connolly or Judge Gallagher. And that can be, seems to have been dangerous for people like Ed Frye and Gary Johnson and Colette Connolly, another Connolly, I don't think related to Rebecca. But we don't know actually how these judges will. I haven't gotten any information on how they treat infraction sleeping tickets. As far as misdemeanor lodging trials, where there have been jury trials that have found peaceful protesters who are on the steps of the courts dramatizing the fact that there is no legal place for people to go, and yet the city continues to criminalize them at night for doing what we all have to do, which is sleep. But still, the very act of being peaceful and protesting it, if you fall asleep while doing that, then becomes a new crime. And indeed, Gary Johnson, currently in jail for being convicted on a six-month sentence on one of these, now faces 2 years, which he was convicted of for falling asleep on a bench last winter with a sign that said, sleep is not a crime, on four successive nights. Yes, he did so intentionally. Yes, he was dramatizing the fact that our Constitution means nothing in Santa Cruz if the authorities can take such an obvious First Amendment activity and turn it into a criminal act and send you to jail for it. But that doesn't seem to, that doesn't bother the Sentinel, that doesn't bother the Public Defender's Office, that doesn't bother any of the people running for office with the possible exception of Steve Plaich. It's hard to say. I guess Micah Posner says he doesn't really like it, but he doesn't think there's the public opinion around to oppose it in a vigorous way, in a substantive way at city council. Since he's one of the people who may win the election, it's that's a depressing response. It makes me think that I will not be voting for him, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think much of this voting situation anyway, because you don't have meaningful choices. But Huff actually had an endorsement meeting. We sent out stuff to all the candidates, a questionnaire, which I read last time, involving issues like the sleeping ban, criminalization of poor people, the sweeps. And we got some answers from Cece Pinero, I guess from, I don't know if Jake Fasari gave us an answer. I think in his own way, Micah Posner gave us answers, and Steve Plaich had answers too. He was, before he became deeply involved in this political campaign, a fairly regular attender of Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings. The answers we got persuaded some members of Huff that the three Ps, Pinero, Plaich, and Posner, were better than the people likely to win, Don Lane, Pamela Comstock, Cynthia Matthews, Rochelle Naroyan. Got her last name right, finally. But Huff members generally did not support an endorsement of anybody. And I think, I mean, one of the reasons I don't support endorsement of anybody is because these folks, with the possible exception of Plaich, are simply not making this issue a front and center element. And it's such an obvious constitutional concern of Huff that it would have to be at least a strong element of their campaign, or at least an element they're going to carry through on, that would encourage Huff members to encourage others to vote for them. Plus, I think Huff needs to continue to push for the basic, obvious, meaningful rights that are being denied, rather than suggest we are going to wait around until all the bigots die or get religion, which is It's like saying you want blacks in the South or women in the 19th century to wait until the patriarchs and the, you know, the white supremacists all, you know, suddenly get wonderful enlightenment. No, you don't need to change people's hearts and minds. You just need to change how people are treated. That has been shown by the partial success of the civil rights movement from the 60s, 50s and 60s. Although, of course, we now have the prison system, which has instituted its new racist capture and criminalization of, what is it, a third of the black male population at one time or another throughout their lives. So it's not like we've come into the golden era at all. But it does show that if you abandon this, we just have to wait until everyone changes their mind, and you got to wait until people change their hearts. That's what Republicans used to say in the 60s when confronted with civil rights legislation. And it's hogwash. It was hogwash then. It's still hogwash. And it's hogwash when candidates in Santa Cruz propose it as well. Although it's understandable because candidates want to be elected and they're nervous about these controversial issues. And so they don't want to be attached to them. I think people should be proud to be attached to controversial issues, because the main purpose I think that we have for those of us who are politically active and in the community, and maybe I'm trying to talk, I'm talking for myself, but maybe this doesn't expand to other people. Different people can decide to do different things with their lives, of course. But for those who are running for political office, it seems to me you've got to be, a light in this situation. You've got to be someone who's willing to lead and not wait around for the crowd so you can jump in front of it with your flag once you think the crowd has gathered enough numbers. On top of that, people like Micah Posner, who say that they've gone door to door, it reminds me of Mike Rotkin, who says the same thing, that they found that there's a lot of hostility toward the homeless, and we can't really confront the sleeping ban head on because that simply would not be successful. We must first work gradually with making it legal to sit near a penguin statue. There aren't any penguin statues, but that's a frequent phrase used by Micah Posner talking about these issues. The bogus art sculpture law passed by Ryan Coonerty, now still on the city council, and those who've taken up his rancid tradition, makes it illegal to sit down within 14 feet of any artwork on Pacific Avenue or in a lot of other districts as well, not just the downtown, but beachfront districts, other commercial districts, Soquel Avenue. And so these things that are put in, including the change machines, which have a 50-foot no-go zone for sitting or peacefully spare changing, even silently peacefully spare changing, are used essentially to create areas where people, if they sit down, can be ticketed, can be driven away from, can be made to feel uncomfortable in the downtown by police officers, which is a regular occurrence, according to more stories you're going to hear at the Red Church, which these interviews, which I was playing a few minutes ago and which I'll continue to play, are from. But again, there are people at the Huff meeting decided not to endorse anyone, but there are those who feel that Posner, Pinero, and Plaich are a better bet than anybody else, and that you should go for them. And that was what one member vigorously proposed. That was Becky Johnson's suggestion. She's a longtime activist. I disagree with her on that, but that, people should make up their own minds as the election proceeds. Listen to these folks. The real problem with anybody running for city council, as I brought up on the air and in the meeting and continue to bring up, is they have no real independent power constituency other than the organization they bring with them. And even such a well-intended and vigorous activist as Steve Plaich, it's not just that he hasn't got the money and the electoral organization to get him into power. It's that once he's in power, he does not have the alternative organization that would enable him to really do the kind of research and put out the kind of information independently of the city staff, which really runs the city under city manager Martine Bernal. And that, even though I get tire of saying it and you probably tire of hearing it, is the truth. We should be going to Bernal's office and to Tina Scholl, assistant city manager's office, and to the department heads who make the 200 G a year salaries, rather than wasting our time with the city council, which ultimately it could have power. I mean, they could fire the city manager, but no city council has even discussed, much less tried to do such a thing ever in this city that I've heard, at least certainly not while I've been around. So that's a kind of a couple of sidelights. I'll talk a little bit more about the Huff meeting and issues that came up and stuff that might interest those interested in homeless civil rights, which is mainly what the show is about. Before I do, however, let's turn to a little musical interlude and maybe to your phone calls. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772. I also want to remind you the station will go dark. It'll go off the air within 2 months unless we can raise rent money or find a cheaper place to be. The rent here is $500 a month in our secret studio location. We need a rent of $300 a month for us to be able to survive, or somebody who's willing to kick down $200 a month for the station. If you want to hear these programs continue, check out different options and bring them to our attention, you can send an email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org with any suggestions or thoughts or contributions you may have. If you go to freakradio.org, www.freakradio.org, you'll find some of our schedules, you'll find our policies, you'll find some archives, and you'll find opportunities to contribute, if you like. That's something that's also at freakradio.org. Now let's listen to a little soothing music, and I'll be back with more of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides.
Well, now, I wrote that song last February, I think, and about the same time as I was writing that song, my TV came on and told me that there was this shadow government in the hills of Virginia in case my legitimate government was nuked. Well, I felt that was a pretty important song that I had just written, so I wrote a shadow song to protect it. It's a song to the George W. Bush and his administration. And while there may be an obscenity or two in it, words like Rumsfeld and Ashcroft and Cheney, and if by using words like that in song, I perhaps can stop my government from, well, I don't know, killing four more Canadian soldiers or breaking up another Afghani wedding party so rudely, well, you know I'm going to do it. And if perhaps I can save the life of my 18-year-old son or anybody else's, I'm going to do it. Raise your eyes out of my sight. You're just a punk who's trying to pick a worldwide fight. Is that oil I see wrapped up in the stars and stripes? Is it true that your W stands for white? Phone your friends to raise your bail, for when we haul your pretzel-eating ass to jail, the Supreme Court, you and good old Kenny Boy Lane versus we the people of the USA. Catherine Harris, Brother Jeb, Ashcroft, Powell, Rice, Ridge, and Rumsfeld, lurking spiders in the devil's web. Are you trying to earn your special place in hell? You spin your yarn from some worn-out Gallup poll, while Cheney's getting his ass sued by the GAO. Hey, George, get that dick under control, or you'll be getting screwed just like everyone else I know. And raise your ass out of my sight. You're just a punk who's trying to pick a worldwide fight. Is that oil I see wrapped up in the stars and stripes? Is it true that your W stands for white? And phone your friends to raise your bail, for when we haul your pretzel-eating ass to jail, the Supreme Court, you and good old Kenny Boy Lay, versus we the people of the USA. Now you got your war, just like dear old dad. Another kid's crusade to kill un-Americans. Will your war on terror finally be won? When there's body parts strewn all the kingdom come. So I ask you, George, our unelected czar, Bible-thumping fascist that you are, are we paying Satan's retribution price? 'Cause I know you didn't learn this shit from Christ. And raise your ass out of my sight. You're just a punk who's trying to pick a worldwide fight.
Mama.
Is that oil I see wrapped up in the stars and stripes?
Mama.
Is it true that your W stands for white?
Obama.
And phone your friends to raise your bail, for when we haul your pretzel-eating ass to jail,
Obama.
The Supreme Court, you and good old Kenny Boy Lay, versus we the people of the USA. George, the White House ain't yours. Get your ass out of it and raise your ass,
Obama,
out of my sight.
Obama.
You're just a punk who's trying to pick a worldwide fight. Is that oil I see wrapped up in the stars and stripes? Is it true that your W stands for white? And phone your friends to raise your bail, for when we haul your pretzel-eating ass to jail, the Supreme Court, you and good old Kenny Boy Lay, versus we the people of the USA. The Supreme Court, you and good old Kenny Boy Lay, have pissed off we the people of the USA. So raise your glass to the sky. Celebrate your freedom while there's time. If you're banking that tomorrow's sun will rise, in the morning you may have a big surprise. And raise your voice, speak your mind, until the waters of emotion fill your eyes. It's just your soul spilling over from inside to let you know you're still alive. It's just your soul spilling over from inside to let you know you're still alive.
Obama. And that was another one from Jim Hendy called Raise Your Ass, Raise Your Bail. Of course, he was directing it to George Bush, but since Führer, Obama has continued and increased the wars, increased the attack on whistleblowers, kept open the torture shops of Guantanamo, and expanded indefinite detention, making it actually legal in the most explicit way, we have, obviously, an continuation of the same policy, although worse than before. And this is something that I think we have to face. And if you want to support someone who has backed that policy, then that's your choice. It's just amazing that people engage in so many rationalizations because they believe that, that they have no other choices than to choose. I guess it was someone called it, it's not the lesser evil, it is rather the more dangerous evil, because it appears to be lesser, but actually creates conditions for and a consensus for the greater evil, which is what Obama has been doing and has done and is, he gives no indication he's going to stop doing. We have a caller. Let's see what's on the line here. Hey there, you're on Free Radio. Welcome.
Oh, hi, Robert. I found out that Jill Stein and the Green Party candidate for president, uh-huh, and her running mate, I can't think of her name at the moment,
mm-hmm,
they tried to go to the presidential debate,
uh-huh,
and they were arrested and taken to jail and locked in handcuffs to metal chairs for 8 hours.
Yeah, that's what Amy Goodman reported on her show this morning. You can still go online, those of you listeners who want to get the account from Jill Stein and her running mate.
I got it on an email from Facebook or something.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's you know, it's kind of like one blow after another you get as you either turn on the radio or open up your email or read the paper. And you know, it sort of becomes, I feel like someone in 1942 in downtown Berlin reading the paper, although I guess you wouldn't
right
have read it that way, but, you know, it's incredible. I mean, I hadn't really been aware that the League of Women Voters had a different policy. According to the Amy Goodman show, they allowed all voters, I should say all candidates who actually had a chance of winning the election because they were on the ballot in enough states to be a part of the debates. I don't remember that happening, although I guess probably back in 1980 when John Anderson was running and Barry Commoner was running.
Well, if it did happen, yeah, the media doesn't cover it. I mean, if any third-party candidate even gets to debate anyone else, the media just don't report it.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of that used to be the organization that set up the official presidential debates, according to what I heard today on Democracy Now!, actually had a policy of requiring all the candidates who at least had a chance of winning a debate. In fact, I think Ross Perot probably debated in 1992 with Clinton and the elder Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But the League of Women Voters no longer runs these debates. It's a different consortium that does. And, of course, they have a very constrained and limited consensus of what they allow. And you can tell it by the questions that are asked. Amy Goodman covered that as well a couple days ago, showing that the questions implicitly assume it's okay to starve the people of Iran with new sanctions. It's just, are they vigorous enough? You know, the real danger is this Iranian nuclear capability, and how can it best be stopped? There's no question about the legitimacy of that, which, of course, is horseshit, the idea that Iran is some kind of menace to the U.S. compared with other countries that even, you know, I mean, it defies belief that people sign on to these myths. But we have to remember that for years the Soviet Union was a similar situation with when Kennedy exploited the missile gap and the bomber gap and lied about that to get into office. It's a corrupt process, and it's one we have to understand and expose, I guess.
Right. Well, thanks for doing your part, Robert.
No, thanks for doing your part.
Okay. Well, maybe talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye. And thanks for calling in. I often feel I get kind of numb here, so I'm not feeling too much. But it's good to know that at least somebody's interested enough in what's being said and wants to contribute to actually put his voice out there. And so thank you. Let's hear a little more voices from the Red Church from Monday the 15th. 15th, 16th, 17th. Yeah, it was the 15th. And I think we were listening to Lee.
Here, these people appear to be a fan club more than a chapter. They're more than glad to like coordinate the putting up of, you know, death penalty signs like the national campaign and does and raise funds for the ACLU, but they don't appear to be willing, even though it made news in Orange County recently that the homeless down there, AP ran that story out of the blue with just statements by homeless people. There was no real quoting of any so-called activists or anything, but it's been noted by the media that these same things that have happened here with the sweep were basically happening throughout the state. And it behooves the local ACLU. They want to be out on the cutting edge. Here's their chance to do it. But I think the real resource they're lacking is a backbone.
Oh, how can you say that?
You know, a spine.
Now, Lee, I understand you went to the last ACLU meeting and it got intense interest from Bob Terran, that lawyer of lawyers, and Steve Plaich, legal worker for the Homeless Legal Assistance Project, and formed a committee to draw up...
I did not know they had formed a committee. I've heard nothing from Bob Plaich and...
Bob Terran?
Bob Terran, I'm sorry.
Steve Plaich, you will be
Steve, I see you on a regular basis, but no one's informed me of any committee meetings. I'm not sure I'm part of this process.
Well, perhaps you're discreetly not invited so as not to alienate the more conservative...
But, you know, I have pointed out from my personal experience, because what they're saying is they're not getting enough complaints. I pointed out to them using a personal incident recently that regarded criminal behavior against me by another homeless person. I happen to have a really bad speed problem. I feel really sorry for them. They don't even act on criminal complaints against the homeless when they're valid and legitimate. You think they're really going to what's the point in writing a complaint against one of their own? The ACLU needs to figure out a way, and this is what I was stumping for in the presentation. They need some mechanism to take those complaints there's no way to do it through the police department itself. It just...
What, you don't like our internal affairs investigations?
I don't know anything about them. All I know is even trying to file a criminal complaint against, let's say, someone trying to steal my bicycle, the officers quickly, you know, ditch that sort of charge, and they discern the other person's drunk, and they throw them in the tank overnight for drunk, and the person's out on the street next day, not resolving the problem, partially because they want the crime to continue because it keeps them in business. No, I don't like these people very much. I think the priorities committee at the city council that never really meets, to the best of my knowledge.
Is there a priorities committee?
There is a prioritization committee.
But Don Lane just prioritizes what he wants.
I understand there's an opening on it, but it's like taking an opening on a committee that never meets, so I'm not even going to consider it. But the point is, their prioritizations are all political. It doesn't work correctly, and it keeps the police from doing a bunch of stuff that they should really be doing instead.
Now, you didn't make it to the Red Church's candidate forum last Wednesday.
No, I don't vote. Voting for a new master every 4 years doesn't make you free.
Yes, but if you vote for a new master, think that it could be a whole new horizon for you, Lee. A whole new leash.
In that glorious land in the sky
where
pray, live on, hey, you'll get pie in the sky. Yeah, absolutely. Now, as far as local politics go, the people that are currently in power and their predecessors from the rollover from what I call the redneck generations of the Peenies and, you know...
Former police chief Gino Peeney.
Yeah, and the people in that time period. One of the big things that's happened here is there was like a rather rapid change from that guard to the new guard, and you didn't have too many periods of time where they weren't just completely in control of what was happening here. Personally, I think UCSC's got this little Skull and Bone Society up there, and it's like a bunch of them saw this place and said, oh, we could roll this bird, and they did it, for better or for worse. But the point is, if you're going to make any change in it, a Steve Plaich or something, what are they going to end up doing? A single voice on a city council with his thumb up his ass as a toothless figurehead in an otherwise fascist city council. What good does that do? It's a waste of energy that could be better exerted to, let's say, pushing harder about, you know, getting that state suit going for a little oversight of policing practices towards the homeless around here.
So what about that project? You have been talking about that a bit. Any progress there? Or?
It's a project. It's a project.
I don't know. Is it a project?
Listen, I live on $200 a month in food
stamps. I don't want to hear any excuses. You're a brilliant and articulate spokesperson.
And the good graces of the universe. I'm okay with that. Don't send me any donations, but I don't have a whole lot of time to be project-oriented, Robert. My life, my existence is resistance. It's the best I can do.
Say that again. I like it.
My existence is resistance.
And we've been talking with... that man about, well, we'll call him Mr. L.
The NSA can go back through the tape and figure out who I am.
They probably can. Thank you very much. We're talking with
Blaze.
Go ahead, Blaze. You say there's an officer you wish to draw to our attention?
Coffee. That works the AM shifts down by the Cowles Beach area.
Okay.
Who basically feels that he is above the law.
Tell me more.
That he can threaten people and harass people, and if he sees people with objects that look like they are of an expensive nature, that he can basically
assume they're thieves.
Yeah, assume they're thieves, run the tags, and basically try to threaten and bully people into getting what he wants.
Now, have you had this experience personally yourself?
Yes.
When was the last time this happened to you?
Probably about 4 or 5 days ago.
And about what time of day did this officer and you meet up?
About 6:30 in the morning.
And what was the nature of the contact? How did it begin?
We were underneath the pier, sleeping, mm-hmm. And he came down there saying that he had been called, and that we were illegally camping and we couldn't be down there. So, in the process of...
How many of you were there?
It was about 5 of us.
Did he ticket you or just drive you off?
He just ran us off.
Okay.
But in the process of doing this, there were 3 bikes there, and he only ran my bike.
Perhaps he felt you needed special privileges. He wanted to show a special distinction to you.
Well, we've had problems before.
And what was an example of a prior encounter you've had with him?
Basically, we were down at Cowles, and he, in so many words, told me he didn't want to see my fucking face down there on Cowles Beach, being very unprofessional and in a very unprofessional manner. Basically said that he would do whatever it took to keep me out of there.
And what prompted this comment, in your view?
I would just say the fact that, you know, I am the type of person that if you are a member of law enforcement and you're going to speak to me with respect, then I will speak to you with respect. If you want to come fly off the handle and talk crazy to me, I'm going to come right back.
And is that what this earlier incident was about?
Yes.
And what was the nature of the disrespect he showed?
Calling me out of my name, assuming that expensive items that I had were stolen, instead of just speaking to me like a normal human being. And I just, no, it's not something that I'm...
Did he cite you or ticket you on either of these occasions?
No.
And have you gotten any tickets from this or any other officer in Santa Cruz in your stay here?
Yes.
Tickets for... if you wish to say.
Camping, running stoplights, things that I kind of view could...
Major crimes, in other words.
I guess in their eyes.
Mm. So, I don't know if Officer Coffey is white, a Latino, African-American, male or female. What's the story on that?
He is a white male who also told me when I asked him, he told me that I am required by law to have the receipt for my registration on my person at all times, or he can take my bike.
That's new to me.
When I distinctly asked him why none of the other 3 officers, 2 of which are his own comrades, SCPD, the other one being a sheriff, none of them ever mentioned any of this, his own words, and I quote, "They don't work as hard as I do."
He is a hardworking individual. Now, have you filed a complaint against this individual for abusive behavior?
Because I am a little naive on how the complaint process goes.
Interesting. Well, you can always come to the Huff meeting. You're about Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We meet every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is about two blocks away from here. And we can show you how to file a complaint, and we can also, we're working on sort of civil rights activity, although, frankly, we're... Our record is limited, and
I think I'm a bit too modest about that. We aren't doing great shakes now, but Huff over the period of the last 22 years has, I think, been successful in beating back and publicizing a lot of repressive measures. And you can learn more about that by going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. We're also on the stream. If you go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and click on the name of the show, Bathrob Spears Broadsides, you will see the link to Tune In, which is the way you can get to the stream without, trying to rush to home, get a pencil and write down all the details of a very long website address. There's no link to Freak Radio on the actual Freak Radio website, but there are archives and interesting bits of information and opportunities to make contributions, which we could use, considering we have 2 months left of life, and then we lose this station, and then we will have no place to go, and we will be a homeless radio station, which actually Free Radio has been homeless before at different times, but I'm less optimistic that this time we would survive that particular situation. But who knows? People can rise to the challenge. I would hate to see that have to happen, though, because I think we would for sure go off the air for a period of time and may go off the air permanently as of December 31st, unless we can find some way of either reducing this rent, which we can't, unless we move somewhere else. And that's why if you have any places with rent for $300 a month or thereabouts, where an errant, piratical but much principled radio station can move in, please give a call, or I should say, go to freakradio.org and let us know, or frsc@freakradio.org is the email address. I want to find out what the rules are regarding bicycles and whether you are required to carry some kind of, evidence that you have a registered bike. So I'm going to call Micah Posner, who for many years was on People Power, and ask him that question on the air, because he is, after all, should be knowledgeable in the area. Of course, the best thing to do is to find out the law yourself and look it over. But I will... If I get his machine, I'll pose it to his machine. If I get him in person, I will pose it to him in person. And I think, actually, I'm realizing that there's another event happening at the same time here. Let me double-check on that.
Hello, this is Micah Posner. You've reached my cell phone. Leave me a message, and I'll get back to you. Thanks.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, Micah, this is Robert of Free Radio calling in live, actually. So listeners are hearing me leave you this message. I just had an interview with a man who claimed that he was told by police that you have to carry proof of registration of your bicycle at all times or it can be confiscated by the police department. I found that unlikely, but I wondered, in your experience as a People Power worker, do you find that's true? Please let me know at 423-4833, and I'll pass on to the community the information you have. If you actually can cite the law, that's even better. But if you just want to give me your general understanding, that would be helpful, too. Thanks a lot. And I'm actually remembering that tonight is not just this forum. Tonight is the forum for the foreclosure discussion, the fight against foreclosure, for publicizing the kinds of abuses and frauds around, and that's happening up at Don Quixote's, or next to Don Quixote's restaurant, and it's free in Felton if you can get up there. Started at 7, but should go on for a couple hours, I imagine. And actually, it was last night there was a city council forum, the candidate forum, at which I guess only three or four candidates showed up. I got a report from Becky Johnson. Maybe we can actually get her on the air to give us a report and see if you know, she can kind of tune us in as to what happened. I'm going to give her a call now and see if she's available.
Hello.
Becky Johnson?
Who's calling?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Oh, my God.
The reason I'm calling you is because you were at the candidate forum last night up the, what is it, out at the Grange, the Liberty League, or whatever they call themselves.
Grange Hall on 17th Avenue.
And it's not that I want to, I want to get involved in it's suggesting that electoral politics means anything to homeless people or to those who want to support them. But I did mention that Huff didn't endorse any of the candidates, but that you were concerned that you thought you would personally like to see the three P's, Pinero, Plaich, and Posner win.
Posner,
Well, I might call him Poser, but no. Okay, Posner, if you will. but you, these were the three who showed up at the forum?
Yes, and Pamela Comstock sent Annalicia Cube as her representative.
That's the Take Back Santa Cruz, dump all those grimy homeless somewhere where we can't see them and then kind of bulldoze them out of town person. That's the one you're talking about. Pamela Comstock, Annalicia Cube, Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yeah, Take Back Santa Cruz is kind of a NIMBY organization that's been less than open with us about their true agenda, and some of their members are pretty vehemently anti-homeless.
Well,
I don't have any particular quotes from Pamela Comstock, but all there are three candidates that were particularly
about. Comstock has this, and numerous other candidates, including Posner. Has the, you know, code word public safety. That's become a big deal, as though somehow everybody in Santa Cruz is unsafe. Although, yeah, you're unsafe. You're going to get kicked out of your house. Yeah, they're going to foreclose on you. Yeah, you're going to lose your job. But rather, the focus has now been on the sinister menace of the man in the bushes who may get you.
Well, I don't think we're statistically any more or less at risk than we've ever been from the homeless element. There's, you know, people are at risk from domestic violence and home break-ins and things like that that really don't have anything to do with homelessness.
And yet there's been this upsurge in homeless sweeps, upsurge in people praising the police department mm-hmm. bragging about the number of camps it's destroyed. What do you make of that?
Well, as far as the voters go, and it does separate the sheep from the wolves. There's three candidates who are vehemently in favor of the sweeps. One candidate who is arguably responsible for the sweeps, and that's Don Lane, the current mayor who's running for re-election. And there are four seats open, and it would make sense to vote for up to four candidates.
If you had four candidates to vote for. Was there any, I think you talked to me earlier about this, your attendance at this Grange. This is, I guess, almost the last candidate forum before the election, right?
There may be one or two still.
I mean, it's not that I think anything, the main value of these candidate forums is you can march in with a lot of people and do a mic check thing a la Occupy, where you raise issues that no one else wants to talk about. Like the destruction of homeless property and the destruction of homeless campsites and the criminalization of poor people and the new curfews and all that stuff. But I'm not aware that's being done. Was that done at all at this Liberty Forum? I guess that's what they call themselves, the I know Liberty was in their title.
I apparently missed Steve Plaich's opening statement where he came out vigorously against the sweeps and spoke in very decisive and strong language, he says. But David and I weren't there yet, so I'll take his word for it. I would say that the candidates that showed up for that forum are the people you want to vote for, and the people that blew it off are the people that you don't want on the council, because they'll blow you off when you bring any other issue up to them.
And our mayor, Don Lane, whom I call Gon Lame, has not, in fact, did not show up.
Don Lane was not there.
Mm-hmm.
Neither was Rochelle Neroyan, nor was Pamela Comstock. Well, Camp Pamela Comstock sent her representative on Alicia Cube,
mm-hmm.
and Cynthia Matthews was a no-show.
Any particular issue?
I think Jake Cesari was there earlier because I saw his literature on the table, but I didn't see
mm-hmm.
him.
Any particular issue?
I went there.
Any particular issues come up that you think were noteworthy?
At that forum?
Yes.
Yeah, the most interesting one, I thought, was an elderly woman, who I think she was one of the Wilfers, went to the question and answer, and she said, I've been noticing that it's more and more difficult to speak at oral communications. The time is cut back. It's at all these weird times.
Oral communications, of course, is a period in front of...
People are not...
oral communications
is... work, so they can't attend, or they don't know when it is. And so she made a strong plea, really, that oral communications be returned to the beginning of the 7 o'clock session.
And we're talking about the city council's oral communications, right?
What?
I just wanted to point out, for those who don't know, you used the word oral communications.
Yes, I did.
And that has to do with the amount of time the city council allows the public to speak on issues that are not on their agenda, which has been sort of moved to this 5 o'clock doghouse position. And so very few people are in the council to hear it, or at least very few members of the public. And I guess that's what I just wanted to clarify that's what you're referring to. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, Robert, if you would wait till I finish my sentence before you say your comment.
I actually did. Go ahead.
Better.
Go ahead.
For me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Let's see. Where was I?
Well, you said that this woman...
I was just telling you what the woman said.
Hopeless.
And she said that she wanted to see them restore it to 7 p.m., let people speak for 3 minutes, and not be interrupted all the time.
Uh-huh.
And so right after that, all three, C.C. Panero, Steve Plaich, and Micah Posner, all got up and spoke and said that if elected, they will restore oral communications to 7 p.m. session. I don't know about the interrupting part, but the amount of time. As Plaich actually said, he thought people should get whatever time they need. He said even if it takes 5 minutes, he wasn't opposed to that.
Uh-huh. Anything else that the two of them, three of them, I should say, said that struck you or any of the audience said?
Just that it seems like they're sort of forming a little bit of a slate there, the three
mm-hmm.
of them.
Okay.
I like the four P's with Ron Pomerantz, who ran for city council 2 years ago and is a stellar candidate. Long, long years of public service for our community and really knowledgeable about how city council works and always well-spoken.
But no objections. No objections.
But he's not running this
but
year.
No objections to the actual sweeps. No public statements whatsoever. No opposition to the curfews that I've heard about from Ron Pomerantz, unless you have some new information on that.
I'm just giving you my assessment of
his
overall candidate.
Right.
And not how he is particularly on our issue.
Right. Well, of course, since
on our issues, there's only one candidate who's good, and that's Steve Plaich.
Uh-huh. Well, you were suggesting Pomerantz as some kind of write-in candidate, so I thought maybe he'd come up with some unusual statements that might encourage people, and I hadn't heard that he'd had, and so I wanted to make sure that I perhaps didn't miss something, and frankly...
Well, I heard him speaking very eloquently on the tobacco licensing item, where they're going to charge all 60 tobacco retail businesses in the city of Santa Cruz with a $554 a year license, which pays for police to sting them every year to make sure they're not selling to the minors, to stop the non-existent problem of teens taking up tobacco use, which has been declining for many years.
Now, I remember that was a lengthy conversation at City Council. And, you know, I thought he was eloquent as well. But again, you know, I am, as you know, in this show, focused on homeless issues. And that's why I raise those issues. I know you're talking more broadly about the City Council, and, you know, that's legitimate, too.
When
any other
candidate,
thoughts?
You have to consider all mm-hmm. other issues as well. And, you know, remember, homelessness is the H word.
Mm-hmm.
Candidates try not to mention it in their campaign at all, or put it in their campaign literature. It's such an insolvable problem.
But our job is to mention it, and that's why I keep raising these issues with you and trying to, you know, mine what you've found by actually going out there and listening to these people and hearing what they have to say. I mean, if, for example, you want to interview Ron Pomerantz and find he actually has the guts to come out and do something he never did in his previous campaign, you know, I don't care. I mean, if you're going to talk about urging people to vote for him, I would encourage you to get more information, on him about this.
I'm just saying that's what I'm going to do. I don't know if there's
okay, that's fine.
Anybody,
I mean, it's just you're a homeless activist.
That's going to urge anyone to do anything.
You know, Becky, you're a homeless activist, and so if you learn more that Pomerantz actually, I didn't have much respect for Pomerantz when he ran because he seemed to me like, you know, he might have been good on a few issues, but not on any of the fundamental issues about around poor people. And if he is, And he has been fighting for those issues, other than fighting for the right of some merchants to sell tobacco more cheaply,
He wasn't fighting for that. He just happened to be there.
I know.
Through some of his
that's what you commended him for. And so, you know, while
I didn't even tell you what he said.
Well, I don't really want to get into what he said. I was there, and I think that.
But your audience wasn't
there. The issue is how he stands on the issues that you and I are both working on together here around restoring civil rights, not just for homeless people. Restoring.
Charlie, I don't have the answer to your question on that.
Okay. And I know you don't. I know you don't.
And maybe like all the other progressive liberals really a big disappointment for us on that. That's likely.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
There is a factor called corruption. Some people are more corruptible than other people.
Mm.
And I think that when you get someone who's just fundamentally a more honest person,
mm-hmm.
elect them.
Mm.
As far as the ballot goes, there's a ballot for the death penalty.
You know, I don't want to roll into the ballot right now. I don't have a lot of time.
I really urge people to vote on that one.
Okay, we're gonna talk about Becky. I don't want to talk about those. I don't want to talk about those issues right now. But I would be happy to have you on the show.
I called you for
a specific purpose, and you've been of assistance in that purpose.
Okay.
And so if
all right, well then you have a great show.
Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye.
And we have another caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Yes.
Two questions for you, Uncle Robert.
Go ahead.
Number one is, are you going to have Scott Graham on to do the election breakdown?
Well, I keep inviting him on.
Uh-huh.
But he's got an unusual schedule. You know, he is a mechanic, does a lot of work, and he also has an unusual nighttime schedule. So I'm going to try. I hope he comes on. And he sometimes listens to the show. So, Scott, if you're listening, we want you on the show. Go ahead.
Scott, shout out. Come on the air.
You know, and also frankly, and this goes for Becky, too, I want to hear her positions on the initiative issues. I just didn't want to hear them now. I mean, that's not really what I'm talking about at this moment. So that's the reason I was trying to kind of end that conversation. What was your second thought?
I always like to hear Scott's input because he provides some good information on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I need him to get on the air so I know how to vote.
Oh, well, you're going to follow that man blindly, are you? You silly fool.
Not blindly. I listen to about 50% of what he says, actually.
Fair enough.
Number two, do you think that the current assault on the homeless camps is different from what happened to the 80s? Do you think it's worse now than the period that we had in the 80s where there was a lot of assault on homeless people?
You know,
how do you compare the two decades?
It's a good question.
What happened in the 80s in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and what's happening now?
You know,
and
that,
I'll leave the answer for you on the air.
Okay. Thank you, caller.
Thanks.
All right. You know, a good question, and one that it's hard for me to answer. Most of the 80s, I was not in Santa Cruz continuously. I was here in the 70s for a while, from 77 to 79, and then I moved up north for about 8 years. I kept coming back to visit folks. I was in correspondence with people who were here. That might be a better question for another activist, Linda LeMaster, who was here during that period of time. My understanding, I came back in the late 80s and was involved in the struggle with Jane Immler, Linda Edwards, and other activists to really, we did a really high-profile organizing around homeless civil rights issues. But, you know, the 80s, had their troll-busting T-shirts. They had the trials of the officers who in the 70s did the Code Blue beatings and some say killings of homeless people. The shakeup in the police department happened in the early 80s when the former police chief, Gino Pini, was retired. And we had the then new police chief, Jack Bassett, who came in. There were the trials that failed against the six police officers who were accused of beating homeless people. They were found not guilty, but they were still fired from the police department. On the other hand, you had a large counterculture community who successfully organized and fought and resisted in ways that, for example, created the street performers guidelines under Tom Noddy and Jan Luby and others. That persevered for 22 years. They were formed in 1980 when the merchants tried to ban street performing. And instead, Tom Noddy, the famous bubble blower at that time, also puppeteer and organizer, was able to get street performers and the city council and the downtown association to agree and understand that it would be worse for them to have a series of laws and court fights than it would to have voluntary understandings, and which is what they did have for 22 years until they were destroyed by the city council in 2002. The voluntary understandings had to do with you can play for an hour, and then if a merchant or another performer wants that space, they can ask you, and then after another hour, you will leave. Actually, you can play for as long as you want, but after an hour, after being asked to leave, you leave, and it's not a law. It's not something a cop can come along and, you know, strong-arm you out of, but it's something that there's peer pressure around. So there was power in the community to fight back. There was the power to stop the county camping ordinance. There was an attempt to establish a county camping ordinance in the mid-80s that failed. Gary Patton established the roadside resting exception, which unfortunately applies only to motorists, not people who live in their vehicles, but people motoring through. But although it has been used in some defense, there are very limited no camping zones in the county. And in theory, there's no camping ban countywide. Although there is a ban on sleeping in your vehicle on any roadway or right of way. So unless you're on private property, it amounts to the same thing. But the city has a ban on camping on most private property. We have a caller. I will continue this answer after picking up this call. Hey, caller, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Free Radio. My ears are burning.
Oh, boy, that sounds like that 1980s activist Linda LeMaster.
Yeah, I don't know how active I was, although I was pretty busy, so maybe I was. But
I called in to answer
that thing you invoked.
Oh, please. Please go ahead. Are the 80s better or worse than the current situation or different?
Unfortunately, nothing's ever as simple as a one-syllable comparison like that in real life, but I can tell you what I believe. I believe that, yes, there were murders, and the cops were charged in some way with scaring people out of town or getting rid of them. And so that's the climate that such murders could happen in. And they were poisoning people with the Jimson weed. They were out of control. And it was a real typical bureaucratic fake-out that only four cops and a police chief took it on the chin for half the police force, in my opinion. This is all my opinion and my perhaps compromised recall. But, I mean, a lot of it is in the Sentinel and in other publications, the weeklies that were around at the time, if you want to, if someone wanted to find out if I am wrong. But I don't think it's quite as bad. But I think it is more crowded here now. There's a hell of a like 20 times more homeless people here now. And things are set up to be that dangerous. You know, we can only hope, and I'm praying that the police department has learned and has a little more protocols, although I watch your letters to them asking for documentation of certain things, and I don't see much sign of them having a better handle on administrative policies and protocols. I don't see any sign of it, but hopefully I'm wrong. Anyway, what I see that's different now than then, and I could be wrong again, is that about half of the city council was rooting on the cops to make a stupid decision like the one they did to literally banish people and then brag about it like roosters in the morning. That, you know, that came from the behavior, the actions that said, yeah, whatever means necessary, get rid of these people. We're mad. We want to take advantage of the moment of a tragedy to banish people, and you're our cops.
Now that's, we're talking the 80s or the current decade.
Right now, in the last 3 to 4 months, I'm talking about our city. While the city council legally can't tell the police department what to do, except somewhat through a chain of command that includes their city manager and the chief of police, and then that's all debatable and unionable. Nonetheless, in this case, this summer, this late summer, the cops were taking their cues from this, allowance to discriminate, not just to selectively enforce tickets, but suddenly, without any public protocol, suddenly the police department had a whole new both attitude and conduct related to things like the sleeping ban. You know, they swore for decades, oh, we only do this on complaint. Now I've seen otherwise, but that was their policy, if you want to call it one. And all of a sudden they're like, we got to get them, we got to get them. That's what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm trying to look at the whole reality of the power structure. In the 80s, I think you had much more of a counterculture. You were coming out of the 70s when there was a switchboard in Santa Cruz that was, you know, somewhat different than the homeless lack of services center. They didn't treat the homeless people as individuals. They didn't treat people who came in as, you know, mental problems, alcohol problems.
Yes, they did. Linda, hang on a second.
Let me say what my thoughts are on this first. My understanding from the switchboard was they provided you a place to leave your backpack. They provided you with connections on getting rides to other cities. There were possibilities for staying overnight with people in different spots. There was probably a suicide prevention line, like, you know, that they have in San Francisco and they had in Berkeley. This wasn't something that required you to somehow come in as some wretched homeless person who is in need of help and who is chronically this or chronically that. It was a sort of acknowledged a person as a traveler, as someone who wasn't in this inferior position. The switchboard, of course, it was in town. It moved to the edge of town, and then it disappeared, I think, by the early 80s.
You left out an important step in its demise.
Yeah.
It was pushed twice farther from downtown. It used to be on Pacific, down by where where you sold your gold coins, whatever you call that, pawn shop was. And once they got it over on Ocean Street and practically to the freeway and funded it through the city, then they were able to control it in a way that it hadn't been, which is to say it became a hierarchy with people at the top not being present. And that's one of the steps that killed it, not just moving it away from the foot traffic.
Interesting.
It's an important detail.
I know at the, in the early part of the 80s, there was also this struggle with the Kuroda's Soup Kitchen mobile unit that was out on the beach flat serving people, and the council or the police were trying to block it from serving food, and the people resisted that, and they were able to successfully do that. There was a successful attempt to close down the parks. In 1984, it became illegal to be in parks after dark, thanks to Jim Lang and the park department. At the same time, you had the city council, which suddenly had a new so-called progressive majority. People like Mike Rotkin, who we now regard as regressive, but in those days, he was billing himself, as he still bills himself, as progressive, but he was more progressive. He actually tried to get rent control passed through several initiatives in the early 80s. There were initiatives in the late 70s to disarm the police from not their ordinary weapons, but from tactical weapons, SWAT-type weapons. Fred Gray and others tried to do that. And so there were, and it was a more liberal to radical climate in this area, I think, at that time.
I was at the gathering where Fred Gray spoke on the post office steps to about 500 people who had gathered and stood down there around the swap thing. And Dennis Matthews was a part of it. Later, they were circling the whole county building in support of, training cops.
Right, so what I'm saying is that it was more, there was more of an activist climate for a lot of these issues. And I think now, I mean, you had the Occupy movement, which sort of came out of nowhere, but I think it was sparked by things that happened in other cities, frankly, throughout the country. It acquired courage through the Wall Street and the appearance throughout the country of, you know, the resistance to unjust authority at City Hall and unresponsive authority and the bank bailouts and the George W. Obama policies of the presidency and so forth.
I don't know how much that's true. I see your point, and I've read a lot of heads agreeing with you. But
I don't think
I think it had more to do with the internet.
Linda, let me finish. I don't think that actually led to. We've got some good activists, but I don't know. It certainly hasn't resulted in the kind of pushback that happened, let's say, in the mid-80s when conservative supervisors tried to pass a countywide camping ordinance and dozens, scores of homeless people came to the Board of Supervisors meeting to successfully oppose it and actually got Gary Patton to lead the opposition, or at least to acknowledge and write into law some provisos that stopped the countywide camping ordinance.
Yeah, that's true, but things are a lot different, not just in a matter of scale, but, you know, in the early 80s, right up to that, including that SWAT public response, there was no word homelessness. Nobody was being called homeless. You were an unidentified transient element if they wanted to make you like the other, the people that the cops were going to chase and the neighbors were going to shun. You know, nobody was called homeless because there weren't that many transients and travelers wandering around loose that came here because you couldn't support yourself.
I would say that I would disagree with you. I would say there was more then than there are now. But, you know, it's interesting we disagree on that.
Heads. That's not at all true. And I think that, you know, go to a spot that had homeless people then and has them now. If it hasn't been made illegal, like the parks in so many places to even be at after sunset. And just do a head count, you know. Go to some of the popular places in the Poganip and spend 3 or 4 hours or something that's consistent and see how many people are there.
Well, it's hard.
I get this from the bureaucrats, too, that, there's not that many homeless people.
No. Linda, what I'm saying is not that there aren't that many homeless people. There are lots of homeless people. But what I'm saying is that there was a much larger transient population that, as you said, wasn't necessarily defined as homeless. It was defined as transient. It was defined as counterculture. But the fact is, I think there was a more supportive environment for that kind of a culture then than there is now. Now you just have impoverished people who are being driven to desperation, you know, by the economy. I think it was beginning then in the 80s. You know, we had the destruction of the housing stock and so forth.
I think the biggest demon in this dynamic you're describing, if we could put it in a mathematical picture, is inflation. That's the biggest killer.
So the issue
that used to support activism, used to poor people doing something after work around here are gone, the same way the parks are gone and the park upkeepers are gone, the same way the cops are fighting for so much of the city budget without much concern for proactive things that the city is to do. The money isn't there to support the infrastructure of the settled people, let alone the people that they choose to be afraid of. I'm saying the citizenry in general.
So the question again, the original question that our caller had was whether things have gotten worse that now than they were in the 80s. And I guess it's a very, as you pointed out when you called in, it's a very complicated answer. You know, in some respects, they're better. Police officers don't seem to be shooting or beating up homeless people in an organized fashion, although there are some who would no doubt dispute that. I've heard of police officers who are much getting more and more aggressive toward homeless people, physically aggressive and violent. I've gotten reports from that at the Red Church that in the same, from not the same people necessarily, but in the same discussions that we've been having that I've been playing on the air. But I think also, you know, you have... you know, it's hard for me to say. I don't. Somebody asked me, are things worse now than they were in the 90s? You know, and I look at it and I say, gosh, that's an interesting question. You know, are things worse on Pacific than they were in 2005? And I can go, I have a certain point in time sense of these things because I was engaged in particular projects downtown at those times, and I can look at them. But I can't really, you know, you on the other hand, I mean, you were working with groups like WELAC and groups that no longer exist, a women's... parents support group, welfare parents support group, and food not bombs at different times. And so, I mean, it's really a very good question, and I guess, but the real question is, you know, what do we do now? I mean,
one thing I think that is different, this is talking to people who are willing to be activists or take responsibility for their cop shop. One thing that's different is things were a lot more provincial back then, a little more local. And things are a lot more federalized now, including everything from the money stream being Homeland Security money and prompts and suggestions of things cops ought to do to the number of people that are hired at a time and go through their training together at the police department. And, you know, the unions are a lot weaker, but there's a lot of systemic stuff that's a lot stronger. So it's really a different ball of wax, and that's why something like Occupy could happen where what happened 100 miles north resonates here. I mean, you know, that was way less likely to have been able to happen back then.
Well,
the internet, of course, is a big part of us.
Well, I think there were mass movements in the 80s, mostly anti-nuclear movements, movements against the war in El Salvador, movements against the, you know, the Contra support. There was a lot. There was the Bill Motto post-action. So there was stuff going on. You know, I don't know that there were, you would know better than I, because you were around continuously through the 80s, whether there were, you know, campouts and sleepouts like we began in the late 80s when Jane Imler ran for city council, when we did endless sleepouts at city council trying to change their laws around the sleeping ban that continued into the 90s. And
I don't think there were big group ones, but I don't think there was so much shitting on the small groups, the families and the couples that would out back then either, that it was somewhat allowed. Look at this pattern consistently in this county. Maybe it's just a general truth, I don't know, but I know about here in this county, when the need outpaces the resource, whether it's a drinking fountain, a curfew time in the park, or what the issue, or even one of these nonprofits providing the service, as soon as it's apparent that the need is bigger than what's available, they close the fucking thing altogether. And that's what we have for social policy, from the federal government to the neighborhood cliques.
You know, I'd love to have you.
There's something inherently wrong with that.
You know, I'd love to have you document that in more specific terms. I know that you and I and Steve Plage and others had a conversation after the Red Church candidate forum where, you know, where we had the candidates talking allegedly about homeless issues, and I thought there was so much that was not discussed that you and others brought up afterward that really need to be specifically examined. I'm hoping that we can get you on the show with Steve Plaich and Chris and others who really has some really specific notions as to piercing the bullshit here, saying, you know, they say we don't have any money. You say, we say horseshit. Here's where the money is. You can use it. You know, and that's the kind of, I think, these are the answers the electorate needs to know about, although none of the council candidates, and that includes Plaich, as far as I know, are discussing these issues in any depth or at any length.
Well, if they didn't have their head out on the chopping block before this, you can't expect them to become more radical if they're trying to get elected.
I expect everybody.
Some people run as a soapbox, not as a not my next job, but I don't see that here.
Anyway, you know, I know you're an expert on this. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm rolling the pace of the show along, Linda. That's the reason
I may be doing that.
And that's the reason you'll hear me interrupting callers like Becky, because I got to get this show rolling along a certain direction, and that's what I want to do, and that's what I will do.
I hear you interrupt me, too, but sometimes it's your show, but sometimes I need to finish a sentence, that's all.
Okay. Did you finish your sentence?
That one, yeah, thank you.
Fair enough. Yeah, sometimes a sentence for somebody means a paragraph and a long argument. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes off in another direction, which is interesting, but not something that I'm trying to focus on at the time. So I know. So, Linda, is there anything more you wanted to say about this issue?
Yeah, a conclusion to what we were just discussing that your prior caller brought up. I don't think we should wait till somebody gets overtly killed instead of maybe he drowned, maybe he was killed. To become better cop watch activists in this town. I think it's something we should have workshops for and invite the college students to know about whether they can come to a workshop or not.
I don't think it should
be all on you and one or two anarchists.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm always calling for, you know, Food Not Bombs, by the way, is trying to restore its, begin again. If people are interested in Food Not Bombs, if you go online, you can find the Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs chapter looking for activists to do some cooking. Food Not Bombs is an organization, for those who don't know, that actually tries to make poverty visible, encourage people to organize against oppression of the poor, and also provide tasty vegetarian food out of food that's discarded by the mainstream community, and yet is still very healthy. It's an interesting situation.
And also they're a co-op, and there's a lot of hungry people here. And also, they're not pushing meat, they're pushing vegetables.
Yeah, they're vegetarian. So I'm going to try to have you on at another point, Linda, and I hope you're still at liberty. I know your trial was postponed. Do you have any updates on that for us? I know you were being charged
with... I hope I'm still at liberty, too.
With
no,
you got to let me finish my sentence, too.
Oh.
647E is the thing you're charged with, the lodging law. We thought you were going to go to trial this week, but you aren't. And then what's the update?
Oh, it sounds to me like, this may be gossip, you can straighten it out, you're a radio man, that you're going to trial, I'm going to a trial readiness hearing, and Gary Johnson might be allowed out of jail all on Halloween. And I don't really have any other new news, but when I get it, I'm going to post it on Indie Media Santa Cruz or Indie Bay Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz Indie Media, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Is that how you say it?
Well, it is IndieBaySantaCruz.org. Indie Bay Santa Cruz. Oh boy,
so,
it is Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you go there, you'll find it, and you can get to that website. And you have posted in the past, and we've talked about your past trials. You also have your own website, Hearth by Linda. Do you not?
Yeah, Linda's Hearth at Google, but hearthbylinda.blogspot.com for people that want to follow this, and a few other interests of mine. Like I'm against the death penalty, and I'm real concerned about how our institutions treat the mentally ill and. Whatever, I'm opinionated.
I got you. And you know, Becky Johnson was on the air, and who I stopped short from going into a discussion of the death penalty on, although I would love to have her and others talk about the initiatives, and I hope we'll have Scott Graham on and others to talk about them. You and she are invited on the air if you want to discuss these issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she also has a website, Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, where people can go and get, I think, excellent stories. And not only that, a lot of troll comments back and forth denouncing her as that big fat blah, 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 showing you how...
She has some nice stuff on there. Yeah. She has stuff you won't find anywhere on the World
Wide
Web.
And it's got some great photos, too. And, you know, and unfortunately, the tenor of her critics is so low and just so, you know, irrelevant and just ad hominem. It's depressing.
I don't read that crap. Ever since I read in the Sentinel thing... that me and Steve Plaich were the same as Robert Norris and Becky Johnson. I've not looked at any of that garbage.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to be compared to Robert Norris and Becky Johnson, that's for sure. I mean, no question.
I just think I have a different tack.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we certainly argue enough, that's for sure.
But we're concerned about a lot of the same people that seem to be getting the shaft, and that's our alliance is important, but if people want to see this as a one-size-fits-all struggle, they're missing most of it.
Thanks for calling in, Linda, and we'll talk again. I want to let callers know that I will be on KSCO on the Saturday morning special day after tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning with attorney Kate Wells discussing First Amendment issues. And so people might want
to... Did you tell your listeners you're finally going to get a trial?
I've been telling them that for months, Linda. You haven't been listening to my show. You're a bad woman.
No, I don't listen to much radio.
Okay. Well, you do call in, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I have about 10 minutes left in the show. Yeah, there is a KSCO two-hour special they do every week, which I've kind of been banned from in the past because Michael Zwirling, the owner of the station, goes ballistic when I mention free radio, and he claims I'm trying to promote this illegal radio station on his show. Actually, I'm not. I wanted to let people know that if they want to hear more of the discussion, they should go to my show, because that's where we talk about it, as you listeners know, at length. But if you want to hear a mainstream AM radio station discussing the First Amendment issues around the upcoming trial, I go to a civil trial. Linda is facing jail. I'm trying to force the former mayors of this town and the those who run the city council to stop harassing those who come to city council and threatening them with arrest for what they term disruptions that are nothing of the kind, that are simply expressions of opinion that they don't like. And that's going to be the issue. It has to do with a mock Nazi salute and some other incidents that happened at city council 10 years ago now, more or less. One of them was 10 years ago, one was 8 years ago. And again, if you want to hear more about this, you can listen to my show. I'll be back on Sunday. Well, actually, that's going to be an interesting issue. I'll talk about that in a moment. But I do a show usually twice a week, Thursday evenings at 6. This is the one you're listening to now. And Sunday mornings, 10 to 1 in the afternoon, sometimes a little later. This coming Sunday is the Homelessness Marathon. Usually it goes at night. Usually it goes in February. But now it's been moved to October, and it's been moved to the daytime. It's going to run from 7 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm thinking that I'm not quite sure how it's going to be handled here. I don't even know if we're going to play it, because that requires actually having people monitoring the stream throughout the entire thing but not doing much else. And I don't know if that's an eight-hour stint. But I think we have Thomas Levitt, who does the wake-up call, has agreed to take the first four-hour stint, and I may find somebody else to take the second four-hour stint, or I may do it myself. We'll see. But that will mean that you'll be hearing not my show, but you'll be hearing the nationwide homelessness marathon, which I think KUSP or KZSC may also be doing. And you can also catch it online on a stream. So I try to give preference to original broadcasting, even if it's me repeating the same things again and again, because usually I try to weave in some new stuff. And I do get callers. You are, of course, always welcome to call in. And that becomes something that becomes a part of the show. So I can't guarantee it, but there will be, hopefully there will be a homelessness marathon, the 15th annual, and will begin 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. If it doesn't, it will be, I'm told, by Jeremy Alderson, who runs the thing, archived. And that's going to happen. Let's see. He gave me some information about that earlier today. And what he told me was what? Radio Free Nashville is the place to go if you want to find the archive of that, or even the live stream of that if we don't run it here. And I'm not sure what's going to happen, but that will be available for people who want it one way or another. There's some other articles I was going to read. One is about the fact that the federal monitor is observing the Oakland Police Department because of its abusive behavior towards citizens, has found not improvement but regression in spite of the very, very limited disciplinary action that the Oakland Police Department is putting out to its officers for critically wounding people, destroying their civil rights in the Occupy protests last fall and subsequently. There's been some issue with some callers concerned that federal
takeover of an Oakland Police Department, because anything the feds take over has to be poisoned, is worse than the current local down-home bully-boy approach of the Oakland PD. I don't buy that, but I can appreciate the concern that that's the case. And I'll be going into that at a future show. I don't have time to do it now. I'll also be talking about the L.A. mayor wanting the city to offer ID cards for immigrants. In the housing protest last Wednesday of National, or is it International, World Homeless Day, charges have been dropped against the housing protesters who took over a building. But there's always the danger they may do the Bob Lee, the Santa Cruz DA thing of charging people months later with felonies. But as of now, there are apparently no charges. San Jose police officer was cleared in a suspect's shooting death. And that, it's another story I got from the Chronicle. The problem with the story is it has the same, the police officer apparently shot and killed a San Jose University student suspected in drug-related slayings of a couple. Again, suddenly the individual killed was a suspect in this, and also his name was Ricardo Moreno. Let me see if I have that right. Ricardo Moreno. He was 23. They claimed he pointed a gun at the officer that shot up his brother's car. The officer Harwell was forced, having to use deadly force in response to the threat of great bodily injury, the usual apologia for police shootings, which may well be quite accurate and may justify the police shooting, but it is such a boilerplate response. And there is no independent discussion of any other witnesses or any of his relatives, whether they accept that, that it makes me believe or fear this is the same blanket justification, rubber stamping of police killings, which many of us have come to see as sort of standard. I'm going to be talking about the initiatives, too, at some point, although I may be too late for that because a lot of the voting is being done now by, I guess, online or absentee. You can, or can you vote online? I'm not even sure of that. But another slaying. Prosecutors and the Mobile County Sheriff's Office reviewing videotape at a University of South Alabama freshman who was naked and hanging out a window at police headquarters. And he apparently was shot at 1:30 a.m. because he assumed a fighting stance, a naked fighting stance. It's interesting. I went online and saw admittedly a radical claim that... a claim from people who are outspoken critics of police violence, that those who are you have a 12 times greater chance of being shot by a police officer than being killed by a terrorist in this country, and I don't know if that's true, but it seemed to resonate with me. I'll be going into discussions from the Sacramento newspaper Homeward, talking about empty condos and the Spanish mayor who became a cult hero for staging robberies at supermarkets and giving stolen groceries to the poor. That kind of tickled me. And I'll hopefully be reading that to you at some future point. There's always a wealth of interesting stories in the paper, but unfortunately, researching them at any depth is something that I don't usually have the time, interest, or persistence to do. If anybody wants to... help in this regard, I'm always open to that kind of assistance. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, and also my home phone, and we'll talk about what can be done there. So I think that's going to wrap it up. I'm going to open the door so Uncle Dennis, who will likely be pounding on the door shortly, will be able to come in, or maybe he'll be out of town. I'm not sure what his... what his story is. Sorry for the delay, folks. Let's see. Other things that I was going to discuss had I the time on the air are... Well, let's see. There's a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, the last one of the month. And it'll be the one where the unreasonably disturbing noise law gets made worse after the old one was thrown out as unconstitutional because it had an exemption for First Amendment or legally protected activity. It said you cannot be given an unreasonably disturbing noise ticket if your activity was necessary in connection with a legally permitted activity. And we thought that I thought that covered everything, really. And I guess so did the judge. It was so vague that he threw out the entire law. And because you couldn't, you know, every person could assume that what they're doing is legally protected. It's just too vague to understand. The problem with the unreasonably disturbing noise law is the whole rest of the law is also too vague to understand. There's no objective criteria, no decibel requirement, as there are in many cities like San Mateo. And that will become law a month after it's passed by City Council next Tuesday at a second reading. If I'm back here in the studio and there is no homelessness marathon happening on Sunday, which could happen, I will be going into that and other things. And it appears that we do have a cream to the dregs arrival here with some tattered-looking albums and some booze. Did you bring the heroin?
I brought Rock Festival.
Rock Festival.
Todd Rundgren.
He's going through these albums, folks.
The Yes album.
The Yes album.
Close to the Edge.
Whatever. Yes. That's another album by Yes, Close to the Edge.
With the Beatles.
With the Beatles. One of their first albums, actually. Yeah,
Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac. One of my old favorites.
Future Games.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Old stuff.
Paul McCartney.
Tug of War.
That was one of his, second or third album, maybe?
Like that.
Yeah.
Dave Mason Alone Together.
And that's going to be the disc scene tonight.
This is the addition to our library.
Oh, you're not going to be playing those then, necessarily.
Well, I might play some of them.
So, and you do play requests, or do you?
Occasionally.
Okay. Well,
they're,
if reasonable.
Reasonable.
And can Don Lane call in and make a request?
Yes, Don Lane can call in.
There you go. You see, here's a man who...
I don't know who the other guy is.
There aren't any other guys, actually. Well, he's the mayor, you know. The new mayor will be Hillary Bryant, in case you're wondering, and she probably won't call in, actually. I can't get her to call me back, actually. That's it for Bathroom... That's it for Bathroom... That's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I would turn down his mic, but unfortunately, it's now his time. I'm in his show, so I've got to follow his rules. And you can hear the kind of abuse that I'm regularly subject to on the streets has now invaded the studio. And the question will be, can we sleep in the studio? Something Dennis will be taking up at great length. He insists no. That means, of course, we can't mine out the studio and rent it out, and therefore we'll have to leave at the end of December, and Free Radio will go down in flames.
No, Robert.
Yes.
Free Radio needs a new home.
There you go. That's going to be the...
Don't let Free Radio become homeless.
That's what I was suggesting earlier, but I got no calls. No large contributions came in, but perhaps you'll be more successful, Dennis. I want to thank you for being on this... The hearing end of the show. I'll be back on Sunday, or if I'm not, the Homelessness Marathon will be. Uncle Dennis has generously agreed to sleep in the studio throughout the entire night. Oh, wait, we have a caller here. I've got to see what's going on. You're on Free Radio, and this is Uncle Dennis from the Cream
to
the Dregs.
I'd like to make a request, please.
I'm going to turn you over to Uncle Dennis. Hang
Gangnam
on, Dennis.
Style.
What's your request, Bearhoos?
Gangnam Style.
Okay, we'll see if we can find that.
By PSY, Gangnam Style. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
And ibbity, that's all, folks.
Young, having a
care, I would climb any tree, take any dare. I was sent off to first grade, where I learned to prepare. Always living for someday, for something out there. I was told to be strong, taught how to win. Happy tears were for losers, and I never give in. How to pledge my allegiance again and again. And that killing for country was never a sin. I was given my chores to earn my next meal. Told what to think and how I should feel. I was ordered to stand, while conditioned and ill. And like a well-trained dog, I was brought under heel. And I danced. I danced, I cowed out and I bowed, I twirled and I pranced, yes I danced, ooh I danced, just a wandering victim of designed ignorance, from the bullies on the playground to the war left by France, from the great halls of Ivy to the walls of finance, from the senseless destruction of my environment, to the natives held hostage on the Indian lands. And I danced through the muck, I danced through the mire, I danced as though my immortal soul were on fire. I danced for the basics that this life requires, till my sentence of dance is finally expired. Your blood boil from a rage deep inside when you find out that the people you trusted had lied. Like so much baggage, they'll cast you aside and laugh at your fate for the strings that you've tied to your own hands and feet as a puppet and a prize of the beast with the buttons in his station on high. When you thought you were simply just trying to survive, does it help you to know there's no place to hide? And you'll dance, yes you'll dance, like the whirling dervish lost in a trance. You'll dance, you'll dance through the sweat and the toil and the love and romance. And you'll dance through the muck and you'll dance through the mire. You'll dance as though your immortal soul were on fire. And you'll dance for the basics that this life requires, till your sentence of dance finally expired.
And turn the mic up where it's supposed to be. There we go. Set my tone levels. There we go. I'm Uncle Dennis, and unfortunately, Jim Hind is going to have to fade away here, because Robert is heading out the door and needs to take his CD with him. Anyway, that was... yeah, gimme. That was something called Sam the Alligator from Jim Hind on the album Shout Down the Wind. Looks like a crusty old dude. Looks like me. Does. Looks a lot like me. Anyway, great stuff. You can hear more of it on Sunday starting at, well, you can't. We're having the homelessness marathon on Sunday.
Maybe.
But come back, tune in back next Thursday. Well, if the homelessness marathon doesn't go, were you coming in?
It's a possibility, but maybe not. Maybe I'll just abandon the whole thing. Because you ingrates, well, we won't get into that.
Robert?
Yes. We'll see what happens. It's an open question right now whether we can get the homelessness marathon on the air.
Well, hopefully you're doing outreach to programmers to just listen to the radio on Sunday. That's all they have to do. And if the stream stops, just come down in here and push a few buttons. It's not an onerous task.
Well, I would hope so.
Unfortunately, I'll be...